wish I could break free, back to where I'm supposed to be.
Welcome to the Signal to Noise podcast on ProSound Web, sponsored by Shure. I'm Keith Clark, editor of ProSound Web and Live Sound International, and I'm joined by my co-host, Michael Lawrence, who in addition to serving as the technical editor of PSW and LSI, is also an accomplished audio professional in his own right.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in once again. And the music you heard on the way in was Break Free by Mike Green. You can hear more of Mike's music at mikegreenmusic.com.
We're joined this time by our guest, Brad Price, who is Senior Product Manager for Audinate, and we're going to be talking to him about the latest developments in Dante networking and also discuss several key aspects of Dante as they relate to the sound reinforcement world. Welcome aboard, Brad.
How do you do? Glad to be here.
So where are you talking to us from currently?
I am from our offices in a tower overlooking the scenic metropolis of Portland, Oregon, where It is curiously sunny today, so we're all staying inside.
All righty. Before we dive into all things Dante, Brad, can you fill us in on your background?
My checkered past, certainly. I've been working with Audinate for quite a long time. I started here in 2009, back when things were just barely getting off the ground, and it was myself and Lee Ellison and a couple of phones and a couple of laptops, and that's all it was. It's changed a lot since then. My background is that I am originally a double E. I'm an electrical engineer, and I did a lot of work in school and afterwards designing audio products, audio ideas, audio things, because I also worked as a musician. So all my lab projects and thesis projects were something to do with live music, because that was what was interesting to me. So I've gone on and worked for a few musical instrument companies like Alembic, car stereo, stuff like Phoenix Gold. Whenever a car goes by and you hear that boom, 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 think of me. I know I do. And then I did a whole lot of work in the software world in other areas, really outside of AV. I worked in education for quite a number of years, and I did that because friends were doing it. It looked like a really interesting project. So I've been involved with several friends in various startups around the Portland area for 30 years. But it's really great to be back in the audio world, the AV world, low these past 10. So I really, really enjoy it here at Audinate.
Mm-hmm. All righty. So we were just at Infocom in Orlando about 10 days ago or so. And the big news there from Audinate was the announcement of new Dante for software products. So why don't you tell us more about that?
Well, sure. Dante as a technology is really software from the get-go. And even the hardware modules that we make and sell, like the Brooklyn and so forth, are essentially small computers running the Dante stack. We always knew we could extend that out to other software products. We did that, of course, all along with Dante Virtual Soundcard. But what we really noticed was a change in the industry, and that was that more and more manufacturers were tapping into the power, the ever-increasing power, of small computer-based systems to perform audio tasks, to do DSP functions, mixing functions, and things like that. So rather than having some dedicated, specialized hardware to do this, increasingly we were seeing manufacturers, QSC being a good example, if I could name drop that one, where they're really relying upon a common, standardized computer architecture, and they're building their products in software on top of that. And owing to the tremendous power of modern CPUs, it's really doable and makes the whole thing extremely cost-effective and flexible. You know, any change you want is just programming away. So we knew that we had to have Dante to fit into that world. And since we'd already done Virtual Soundcard, we knew what that was going to look like, basically. But we had to optimize it and really reform the whole thing from the ground up so that it would be able to work in those situations. So What we're talking about here is the ability to have Dante be part of the software that runs a dedicated audio appliance, which is, in its little beating heart, a computer. So now you don't need to add additional hardware. A manufacturer can simply incorporate the software, have an Ethernet jack on the product, and they're just about ready to go.
So, Brad, is this primarily something that the manufacturers are going to want to be paying attention to, or are there? Do you see any end user applications for this? Because you already have, you know, VIA, which we're going to talk about briefly.
Sure.
What role do you see there?
This is really the two announcements we made at Infocom are really targeted at manufacturers, and we introduced two distinctly different flavors of Dante as software for manufacturers. So the first is Dante embedded platform, and that one targets appliances. That is a box, which is a dedicated box, but it is a computer inside. And a good example of that would be many DSPs you see on the market. And this would allow Dante to be run as software and thereby avoiding the additional costs of adding more hardware to that product. You'd be able to flexibly just put that software in there and have Dante there. The other version that we introduced at Infocom we call Dante Application Library. This targets software developers who write applications for Mac and Windows PCs. In this case, it's sort of getting into the space where we already have a presence, where Dante Virtual Soundcard and Dante VIA already exist. But this now allows manufacturers to build Dante directly into their application, so that rather than having to share a resource on the computer like Dante Virtual Soundcard, each application has its own unique, controllable instance of Dante. And this enables manufacturers, developers, to be able to ship a product that has Dante out of the box, ready to go with almost no configuration necessary by the end user.
So, Brad, you and I did, we had a conversation about a month ago about some of the basic ideas behind Dante and what someone who maybe isn't familiar with the platform would need to get started. And so I kind of want to touch on some of those ideas again, and maybe we can elaborate on them a little bit. And the first thing that I want to talk about is Dante Virtual Soundcard.
Sure.
And, you know, which is a question that I asked you when we spoke last time. You know, how is that similar to Dante VIA, and how is it different than Dante VIA? And if I'm an end user, you know, what do I need to know about these two software products that you guys have?
Sure. So you're correct. Dante Virtual Soundcard and Dante VIA are our two end user focused products that we sell directly to end users. And that is a variety of Dante as software. Dante Virtual Soundcard, when installed, behaves like a physical sound card. That is, I see one new object appear in my audio settings. On a Mac, it would be in the regular system settings for audio and a core audio. And in Windows, I would see it either as an ASIO device or a Windows device, depending on how I set it up. But once I configure it, then it is a resource that is there on the computer that can be accessed by any application, just like the built-in sound card can. So in that sense, applications have no idea they're talking to Dante. They're just talking to an audio interface, and that's it. And it happens that the other end of that interface is out on an Ethernet cable. So Virtual Soundcard was our first software product. It's extremely mature. It's extremely stable. And it gets you up to 64 by 64 channels of audio that to record or play out with. And that's a really great application for professional recording and playout, and we see that used that way constantly, all the time. We've sold a lot of Dante Virtual Soundcard. Dante VIA takes that idea and makes it a little more flexible. What Dante Virtual Soundcard does is creates a single virtual audio device. Dante VIA, in fact, creates multiple little virtual audio devices on the fly as needed. So it enables me to attach other audio products to the computer, say via USB or Thunderbolt or something like that. And if it's detected as an audio device, then Dante VIA can enable that device to communicate directly over the network with its own uniquely named channels. So it really lets you extend Dante out to connected hardware, not just applications. It also allows you to allow applications to have their own direct access to the Dante network. And unlike Virtual Soundcard, where there's just a simple blob of channels to use, Dante VIA creates channels on the fly for each application. So let's say that I clicked Enable Dante on iTunes, well, that means that two channels of output are going to appear on the network instantly when I do that and be ready to route. So Dante Via is much more dynamic. It creates multiple little virtual audio devices depending upon what you're plugging in and what you're enabling, whereas Virtual Sound Card creates a single static virtual audio device. So they're really good for different things. I would use Via when I wanted to combine different bits of hardware and different bits of software together and create sort of amalgamated devices and mixes that way. I'd use Virtual Sound Card when I just want that single reliable interface for, say, recording multi-track audio at a live event or recording studio.
So one of the things that I was working on recently, I was working on a theatrical production, and they had a couple of sound cues that were coming off a computer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just dread the error message popping up or some other app, you know, making a sound, or the, you know, if you're on a Mac, the plop, plop, plop when you're right. adjusting the obviously things that I don't want coming through my console
sure.
during the show. And so if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying that if I used Via to do that, I could isolate that program and I wouldn't
that's
get stuff
exactly
from
right.
other programs. Right. So
right.
I see that as a big benefit.
That's right. It is a big benefit because the Dante Via doesn't create any shared resources. Each application gets its own. And that means all those system sounds and boops and bleeps don't get into your audio because it's only paying attention to that one application or one device at a time. Whereas Virtual Sound Card can be set to be the entire system sound device, in which case, yeah, it catches everything, all your email boops and bleeps as well.
So, Brad, when we talked, I said, hey, what does someone need to get started? And you basically said, you know, just get everything on the network and
yeah.
it pretty much goes. So
pretty much,
when you see people that are having issues, what are some of the more common issues that you do see, and maybe what are some things that people could pay attention to?
Oh, there is one number one issue, and we at Audinate know what that is, because it's the most common kind of support call we get. It's over-configuration of switches. Dante is really designed to work on just about flawlessly out of the box in most any situation if I don't mess with anything else. That is, if I just have a regular open network, if I went to the store today and I bought myself a couple of generic switches and I plugged them in and plugged in some Dante devices, that should work with like 99.99% likelihood. It's just going to work. What happens is that people get, understandably, a little concerned. They want to make sure everything's going to be just right, so they go buy a more expensive, more complicated switch, and they spend a lot of time going through configuration steps to turn on things like QoS or IGMP snooping and other advanced features that can be helpful in a Dante network, but also require some real understanding. And so what we'll find is that somebody has configured all this. They're not a network expert, so they don't know that they didn't do it quite right. And then they turn on Dante, and lo and behold, things aren't working because the switch is configured to block some traffic, and they don't know why. So we spend a lot of time helping people to undo settings and restore the switch to a more sane state. Our MO on this is basically to tell people, look, when you get your Dante devices, step one, plug them in, leave the switch like it came out of the box, just power it up. Does everything work? Bet you it works. And then start adding any necessary measures that you might need. The fact is that a lot of the excess switch configuration that we see is unnecessary for the applications people have. They just don't need to be doing it. And so that's the number one problem we see, and the number one thing that I urge people to avoid. We, like I said, always recommend that people just simply plug it in stock and see how it works. And you'll know when you broke it. Put it that way.
So would you, if I had the choice between using a managed switch and an unmanaged switch, which would you recommend?
Generally a managed switch, because they're higher quality switches and they have the capacity to handle any particular thing you might come across. However, I'm really going to qualify that statement, because if you're running a network that's going to be pretty static and remain in place for a long time without doing a lot of changes, and it's just Dante, and there's an awful lot of this, there's a ton of houses of worship, little event spaces and so forth where they've got Dante, but that's the only thing on the network. Nobody's checking their Facebook on the network. If that's what you're doing, then you can use an unmanaged switch and it's really not going to matter. The only thing that managed switches do that you really need to be worried about is they help Dante to coexist with other types of network traffic. If there isn't any other kind of network traffic, the point's rather lost.
And I would, you know, in my personal work, something I do, you know, relatively often is I'm working with a lot of Shure wireless stuff. And so that'll be networked just so I can monitor it from front of house. You know, I'll have my receivers on stage and I can monitor with wireless workbench and the timeline view. And I'm not throwing a lot of traffic through that network. It's pretty much just that. And so for something like that, I would just, you know, there's no issue with having my Dante devices on the same network as an RF rig.
No, not at all. The only time those things ever become an issue is when the amount of traffic is really pretty large. And when I say large, I mean many hundreds of megabits per second large, like 70% of your whole port bandwidth, which is on gigabit 1,000 megabits per second. If you're below 700 or so, there's almost nothing you could do to hurt it. So there are circumstances where this can really be an issue if I'm trying to coexist with a lot of different parts of traffic and that traffic might be bursty in nature. But in general, the kind of traffic we see from audio devices is very, very small. And it's important to remember, too, that the amount of bandwidth required for audio on a network is very small. People tend to think of it as large because for a long time we lived with digital standards that were pretty sharply limited at things like 32 channels or maybe 64 at the top end for MADI. But on a gigabit network, that's barely a sneeze. 64 channels is under 10% of your bandwidth. So, and that's only on one port. You can have multiple devices putting hundreds of channels on each port. That's not a problem at all. So I just wish to impress upon people that audio is, for a network, a relatively easy task.
So if you have a Dante network in place and everything's going great and you say, well, you know, this is kind of going to be a long-term thing for us. We want to make sure that our bases are covered in the event that something fails. Dante can do a redundant network. So
that
can you
correct.
Walk us through that?
Right. Dante redundancy, which is available only pretty much on the larger channel count devices, the Brooklyn and Broadway-based devices as we think of them in-house, allows you to have two completely separate, and I mean physically separate networks, all carrying the identical Dante traffic at the same time. So the way that this would work is I'd have two network ports on the back of my devices, and I connect up my primary port, and I make my original Dante network. Rule of thumb, in addition to switch configuration, is always make your primary network first. Check it. Does it work? Good. Now start connecting your redundant network on the secondary port. And then you would be laying completely separate cable, completely separate switches. And they'd all connect on the secondary port. So these two are completely physically separate from each other. Now if I come along and I take some scissors and I snip the line on the primary, you won't hear anything happen to the audio. It's just going to continue flowing because all that audio is simultaneously on the secondary network all the time. And so there is no failover. It simply has another source for the bits to land in the bucket, if you will. And so it doesn't change anything. It's like having one faucet that gets instantaneously turned off while the other was instantaneously turned on. The amount of water stays the same in your bucket. So Dante redundancy is really great for when you have a really important mission-critical kind of application, and you want to make sure that in the event of some crazy physical failure, a power supply going out, a roadie tripping over some cables, something like that, that you've got the ability for the audio to continue going, and everything keeps on working normally. The end user doesn't have to do anything about this. They just keep using Dante controller, and they don't have to really act upon it until there's time to deal with it after the show, because the network is not going to fail because it's running on the secondary. It's just going to keep behaving like it did before.
And what's funny to me is, you know, it's something that I've noticed. I recently purchased a new audio console, and it allows a redundant connection between the console surface and the stage boxes, which is something that I didn't have on my previous platform. And it's never gone down. I've never had an issue with it, but it's amazing the reduction in stress that happens when you know that there is a, you know, a redundant connection in place. And it's just amazing how more relaxed I feel knowing that, hey, if this cable goes down, my show's not going
to
go down.
Right. And it's a satisfying demonstration to oneself to get a system going and just yank out a main cable and listen how absolutely nothing happens.
So what I'm interested in, and about 10 years ago, I was working on a show with a the visiting engineer was a Broadway sound designer. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about, you know, at that time, you know, Dante was pretty new, and it was just starting to gain visibility. And the designer I was talking to had been working on a Matty networked rig that was, you know, and he said, yeah, I think this is the way to go. And I said to him, I think it's going to be Dante. And he said, oh, yeah? And I said, yeah. And so 10 years later, it's really funny to see the adoption that's happened. And as I mentioned to you before we started recording our podcast, I was working on a Symmetrics DSP this week for a project. And I believe they were one of your earlier adopters too. Is that
they
correct?
They were. They were in the early adopters club. We got a few esteemed members there. That is true. And there are several DSPs that now use Dante. And it has become the effective standard. We're very proud of that because we worked really hard. But I'll tell you this, and this is the God's honest truth, that I joined this company back in 2009 because I spoke with the founders who were just getting this off the ground, and they laid out for me how they were thinking about these problems, because I came from an engineering background. And what impressed me deeply was how thoroughly they'd thought through the problem and how, frankly, delightfully they'd come up with solutions. So that even back then, so long ago, it basically worked the same way it does now. You just plug things in, and it just worked, and all those niggly issues were just done and solved, and the thing worked so well. So in a way, I'm not surprised this was the way it was supposed to go, because good stuff should just win, I guess, in the end. No, it doesn't always do that. But I think that the march over to networking was going to be inevitable. You think about Matty. That's a great example. Matty was a perfectly great technology for its time. It still works just fine, right? You can hook it up and it's going to be just fine. But that's not networking. That's still a point-to-point system. That's still wed to the idea that I've got box A, and then I've got a cable that connects it to box B, and I've got cables that connect that to box C, and so on. And as long as I'm thinking that way, then my system is always defined by hardware. It's always defined by what box is connected to what box with what cable. And when you go to networking, that distinction, that point-to-point daisy chaining of signals and conceptions goes away. Suddenly everything's connected to, well, everything all at once, because that's how a network works. And so that means I've got all the flexibility in the world all the time. I don't have to get up from my seat and move a cable. I just click something. Want it to go to six places at once? Not a problem. Click them. So I really feel like networking would win out in the end no matter what. It's less expensive. It simply has qualities that make it incredibly flexible, incredibly appealing. And we're the ones who put the work in to make that happen now.
So I guess you almost answered something that I wanted to ask you, which is when you first got involved with Dante versus where it is today, what's changed? What stayed the same? You know, have you sort of, what have you done to react to the way, you know, you talked about that
a little bit.
Going to the software platform, I think, is a good example of looking at what's happening in our business, in our industry, and saying, how can we meet these
right.
needs?
Well, there have been so many changes on the inside that would be rather mundane bits of business. You know, all the bugs we had to fix, all the conditions we had to satisfy. So in many ways, the Dante of 2019 is a much, much better product, a better version of itself than it was in 2009. That's absolutely true, broadly speaking. But what we've done is we've added a much more flexible arrangement of products. When we first started, we had very few ways for manufacturers to get product into, to get Dante into their products. We tremendously expanded that over time to make sure that just about every option became available, from little tiny inexpensive chips that do just one or two channels to, you know, behemoths that do 512 channels simultaneously on a network. We've also had to, you can't believe the amount of work that's gone into Dante Controller. Dante Controller has looked the same. It's had the same haircut for a long time. But it it has undergone tremendous changes to be more robust, to add more monitoring, and to be the best citizen it can be in the AV world. And then, of course, we've added more things that are in addition to the audio world on top of all this. We've added Dante Domain Manager, which is a server-based product that allows managers to allows people to manage Dante networks, to split them off into zones that are completely separate from each other. We call those domains, to provide user authentication so that only the right people can monkey with your system or make any changes, and you get alerts on everything that happens. So we've been introducing those sorts of tools that really speak to the larger customers, the people who are doing this in the context of an IT department. They've got to have those tools. And then, of course, most recently, we introduced video. There's Dante AV now. So we've now released our first product that puts video on the network exactly the same way as we do Dante audio. It works with Dante Controller, just like Dante audio.
And we did talk a little bit about, in the interview that we did together, we did talk a little bit about some actual applications. You, you outlined some. But before we get to that, I wanted to ask you, I was talking with system optimization guru Bob McCarthy the other day, and you know, someone asked him, what should someone who wants to be a system tech or is a system tech now going forward, you know, what sort of challenges should they be ready to face? And and what Bob said was, you guys have to deal with something that I never had to deal with, which is networked audio. And
that's right.
It's a whole new thing. And so I think there are a whole crowd of people out there that are just sort of inherently scared of anything that's networked or digital or this or that. And what is your philosophy or approach regarding education and getting people trained on your platform?
You know, I'm going to back up just a tiny bit from that and say we use tremendously complicated technology. And when I say we, I mean the big we, like me and you and everybody on the street. You know, we're all carrying around phones in our pockets that are connected to elaborately complicated networks that do amazing things. But what are we doing? We just pick it up and we text a friend and read something on Facebook and get an alert that there's a lot of traffic. So there's a really large degree to which technology doesn't have to be understood completely for a person to get a tremendous amount of value out of it. And to a degree, that's true of audio networking too. Not every person who does it needs to become a network engineer. They can have some faith that when they plug this in and it pops up on the screen, it works, just as you do with your computer or your phone when you're, you know, banking over the internet. So at a lower level, I think people can get by with enough knowledge to be comfortable and have a mental image of what's going on in a network without necessarily knowing all the details. That's something that we really try to get across in the Dante certification program in the first couple of levels. The first two levels of the Dante certification program were my baby a few years ago when I started that thing off. And the goal there was very much not to hammer somebody over the head with the complexities of networking, because Lord knows if you want to get complex, you can. It's just not going to help you most of the time. So we stressed very much the practical aspects, which is really just a relatively slight amount of networking knowledge combined with a little bit of common sense and some reliance upon some tools that we build that help people to understand what's going on and to diagnose their problems. So for people operating at the smaller scale, they don't need to know a lot of networking. They just need to be comfortable with the fact that it works and have some faith in the software that it's telling them the truth, and that they will get their job done. At the higher level, when you're doing something like, you know, moving a tour around from place to place or installing elaborate systems that run across buildings and a campus and things like that, okay, now you need to have the knowledge that a person who does general IT work would do. But really the parts we're talking about are only the things that can have to do with direct connectivity. We're talking about understanding multicast and how that works, understanding unicast and how that works, understanding IP addressing and how that works. There's a lot that IT departments do that you don't have to concern yourself with. A lot of those folks are concerned all over the place with, say, you know, a lot of security and making sure their email server works just right. Well, we're not doing very much of that. We're pretty much just relying upon the basic protocols to get our job done. So I think that something like Dante Certification Level 3 is appropriate for people who are going to be tackling bigger, more complex jobs, people who are just curious and want to know this stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. But a lot of people can get their work done with something like the Level 2 training and really be okay most all the time.
And and that's all available on your website free, correct?
That's right.
On Audinate.com?
You can you can get it on our website. And if you want to have real fun, then you come out to one of our events and get it delivered piping hot fresh from one of our trainers. We often have events going on around the country in metro areas, and at virtually any of the big shows like Infocom or things like that, we've always got training that precedes the show. So if the show is opening on Wednesday morning, we're going to have training going on Monday and Tuesday that week. So keep an eye out for that. And we have newsletters and so forth that tell you when trainings are going on so people can attend. Again, it's always free. And we want people to get this and to enjoy it. And it's straight up technical information. We try really hard to make sure these things don't sound like infomercials. This is straight up info that really is good for anybody doing just about any kind of audio networking.
And I, the reason I wanted to bring that up is because, you know, I think it's fairly common these days for people to be doing something like, you know, mixing from a mobile device, Wi-Fi. And so there's a lot of different training opportunities out there, and a lot of them are, you know, people say, I would love to take the whatever class, but I just can't afford it right now, or I just don't have time to travel right now. And so I think what's great, what I enjoyed about the Dante class is I just sat back on my couch with my laptop, put some headphones on. And you can just go through it at your own pace. You can back up the video and take some notes. If you know
that's right.
That was, I recently went back and reviewed something in the Level 2 class that I, you know, had to just brush up on. And so, even for people that aren't working with a Dante network right now, where they are in their career, I think it's helpful because, like you said, you do go through basic networking concepts, and those things are going to be a big help when people get into a lot of the technology that surrounds our audio work today.
Right, because we just want to stress that it would be unhelpful to tell people that they needed to get the equivalent of a college degree to run the system, because it's also not true. So I feel strongly that what we have in those training courses reflects pretty accurately what people actually need to know to get their jobs done. And we go as high as Level 3, and we even do some advanced breakout sessions for people at some when we do live events, because some people will be in a crazily complicated environment. That does happen. They're trying to operate in a system that's already built, already exists, and has some crazy restrictions in place. How do you make Dante work there? Well, there's almost always a way, but that requires more expertise.
So it is summer. It is festival season here, and we talked a little bit about the Rat Sound Systems putting Dante to work at the Coachella Music Festival.
That's right.
So can you just give us an overview of that project and how the system was set up and you know, how that went?
I wasn't there, so I got to tell you that. But they were using Dante very effectively to set up delay towers, and they wanted to be able to achieve pretty large distances between these towers and have the amplifiers located at each point. And so Dante accommodates that really, really well, because the latency of a Dante system is fixed. So that means that I don't have to wonder about there being any different latencies at these different points. The Dante system will ensure that its involvement in latency is absolutely dead consistent. And of course, because it's a network technology, I can cover tremendously large distances. We can cover 300 feet with a regular copper cable, which is, of course, that's not a Dante thing. That's just a networking thing. That's all that is. 300 feet's the limit for Ethernet. For installations like Coachella, they're going over larger distances, so they're using fiber. And they're using fiber to connect those delay towers, and that's broken out into Ethernet connections at each one going into a Dante-enabled amplifier. And they're using DSPs to then adjust precisely whatever delay they want in that system, knowing that Dante will not add or subtract anything from that at any of those points. So that's what they were using it for in that case. They're using it to achieve large distance, and rigid control over latency.
And the other application we talked about was a zoo, and that was just a really big, you use the word sprawling system, that was just spread out all over the place.
Hundreds and hundreds of acres. You know what a zoo is like. Big outdoor spaces, little winding trails, and little exhibits all over the place. The Oregon Zoo up here is certainly like that. And what the problem that these people had before was that they had all these scattered audio systems. They were for making announcements. They were for performers doing shows, like, you know, an exhibit where the elephants are doing something. They had background music going on. And what they had was a hodgepodge of analog systems that had grown organically over decades and was a complete mess. If you wanted to patch one thing to another, it meant getting in a truck and bringing cable along and getting up on tall ladders and trying to string things here and there. So virtually any change to the system took days. It took multiple people. It took vehicles. It was like that. So what they did is they went for a complete Dante system. And they went further than that. They put in Dante Domain Manager. And what that lets them do is take all these sections of the zoo and divide it up into these neatly partitioned domains so that they could see clearly, this is the Africa Wildlife Exhibit. This is the sound for the concessions area, you know, and so forth. And that meant that a person could be in charge of audio for one of those sections and not be able to make any changes to the others so that no mistakes could be made. It also, and really importantly, meant that nobody had to get up from their chair to drive a golf cart over to some joint and make a change. Everything is just right there on a PC, sitting in the office. And when they say, we need to send audio from this announcement server over to the African exhibit, it's just a couple of clicks. It's happening. So they built that system so that it could scale, it could accommodate additional growth in the zoo, and it can accommodate new employees coming in really easily because they've got this ability to control user access to the system. And so they guarantee that only the managers at each section of the zoo have access to the things they need to access and nothing more. So that way they've created a system that's really bulletproof, really immune from tampering, and works great, doesn't have all the hum and buzz and junk from the old analog system. That's another advantage of audio networking we'll just throw in as a side, Benny, is that in a network system, there's no such a thing as a ground loop. Doesn't happen. You've got essentially a noise floor that's, you know, impossibly low, and there's no possibility of the introduction of hum or things like that from the system itself. So their system became far better fidelity and far easier to manage and far easier to scale up as they add new people, add new exhibits.
Well, I think we've checked all the boxes of things that I wanted to ask you about. So, Keith, did you have anything else?
Yeah, anything else? I'm here.
No. I think this has been extremely interesting, and I hope the audience agrees. And maybe some of the curmudgeons out there who have been resisting networking might reconsider. So I'd like to point out that the article that Michael and Brad, the Q&A that they collaborated on recently is available on ProSound Web. And actually, I've posted a link to it on our podcast page to make it easier. And also posted a link to the announcement about the new Dante for software products. Anybody interested can get there easily and quickly. I just would refer everyone to also go to the Audinate site, audinate.com, yep, and be sure to check out the certification and the various levels with that. And there's also a lot more really good stuff on that site. And there's also the ways to contact key Audinate people with, yep, your questions and for more information and what have you. So audinate.com.
I just want to add that if you head over to audinate.com, I really do recommend you go ahead and make a little account and sign up for our very, very, very low volume email newsletters. We guarantee we do not sell your info to anybody else. That is not what we're in this for at all. It is handled by our lovely marketing team. of Mike and Michelle, and I wouldn't trade them for the world. And they, you'll get information about training sessions that are coming up, about new products. When there's a really interesting, significant new product that has Dante in it, we'll tell you about it. Training coming to your town, we'll tell you about it. We also want to say one other thing about the site, which is something we're pretty proud of because we put a lot of work into it, and that is our product directory. You know, manufacturers, about 450 of them now, make a boatload of Dante products, and keeping all that tracked is pretty hard. There's no one section we can go to. And those manufacturers have no obligation to tell us everything they're releasing with Dante in it. Sometimes we're as surprised as you are. So our product directory is kept up on fanatically and lists thousands of Dante-enabled products, all categorized by type and manufacturer. So that if you're wondering, geez, can I get a Dante thing that does this job I want? Well, go over there. It's the number one place to figure out the answer to that question.
All righty. Well, thank you very much, Brad. I'm sure we'll be speaking in the near future. And also, special thanks to our sponsor, Shure, for their support, as well as the SM7B microphones that Michael and I are both using for this podcast. So that's it, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode.